someone tries to call up on Skype and do some kind of a deal, he's like, hold on, man, I'm talking to the computer. That's where the feedback's coming from.
They'll be like, I love the way this room sounds, man.
You can technically explain to the people why it sounds like shit. You can be like, well,
that's right.
This is the concept behind the loop.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
The economy is not that great right now in America.
Right.
You've had a really good full-time job in the music industry, which a lot of people would kill for, especially the ones graduating from all those schools.
Right.
But yet, you still were able to find your own niche and break out on your own in that industry, which is really cutthroat. So I just want to kind of hear the story of how you were able to get from point A to point B.
You're right. I actually did a... It's kind of crazy to think that I did have like a full-time job and making music and all that kind of stuff, being involved in basically, like you say, what a lot of people would love to be involved in, which is the creation of music. I'm pretty much 9 to 5 every day. But I kind of started to hit a wall. Really, it was really good for about the first three and a half, four years. I really felt like it was great. And what was happening was I was just learning. I was learning the business, so to speak, and I was learning what it takes to, to deal with clients. I was learning what it means to make a commitment to, do something on time and deliver something on time that the client likes. You can always deliver something, but delivering something on time that the client loves, that's a whole nother paradigm. That's exponentially harder. So I can't say I did it every time, but I did learn, a lot from working 9 to 5, having to show up, and someone walks in, it's like, dude, we got this song, it's got to be this way and this way, and it sound like this, and you're like, oh my gosh, how am I going to make it happen? That kind of crucible there's no escape, it's you. Maybe you do it, or it's like a home run derby. You got to knock it out every time. It was cool. It was really great to learn. It really made me a much stronger field. It made me a stronger song, songwriter first off, but the main thing is that doesn't even matter. Like, I figured out that once you get to that level, it doesn't even matter. What people really want is good bedside manner, because a lot of the people that you're working for are a lot more stressed out than you'll ever be. So they really want someone that they know if they call you, you're going to do something that's going to be under budget, just like any business. And you're going to make some kind of product that either flies off the shelf or is very well received or whatever, whatever benchmark you need to hit or whatever product you're doing. They want to know that, that you can deliver. And by doing, being in a full-time gig like that for so many years, I learned a lot of the ways to do that.
Can you give some examples of projects that you worked on?
One of the biggest ones, I guess, that I've done is just a network here in Atlanta. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, in the United States. So there's Turner Broadcasting System on the TBS. For some reason, man, I don't know why, but some of the people there, they just started liking me. And I don't even know if it was because what I was doing was super great. It might have been a personality thing. Whatever it was just kind of clicked. And they had this gig that came up, and it was something they call Laugh Tracks, which are these little, 30-second ads that they do for all different kind of clients. It's basically like a cross promotion between the brand, whatever brand they're advertising, and a Turner itself, TBS itself. So they would have an internal, producer for TBS that would deal with the clients, say Carnival Cruise Lines or Popeyes or lots of movies Frankenweenie. I just did one for Despicable Me 2. Did one for the Box Trolls. There's lots of movie franchises,
right,
all the way down to toothpaste. So basically what happens is they come up with a script. They'll come in, say 9:30 in the morning, and they'll go, I like this Lady Gaga song. Or man, Tin Pan Alley style music or whatever. And we'll just go to YouTube and just kind of vibe out on tracks. And then we'll try to decide, okay, this might be fun to do. They'll have a script. I'll pick up my guitar and we'll just write a song really quickly. Something really quick and dirty. Literally, we'll do it probably 30 minutes tops. And they'll send it out for approval. And then from there, we kind of do our thing. We'll polish it down, hire real people to come in and do it. But what that gig afforded me was just a huge network of advertisers that I could work with. One day it's Carnival Cruise Lines, the next day it's Honda. Then from Honda, we jump to Popeyes. And from Popeyes, we some dating site. It's all over the place. And the one thing that's the same through all that whole process is the fact that the time element is the same. I got to the point where I'm like, okay, what are we doing? We're doing this. Great. Fine. Let's just knock it out. And I was able to kind of quantify what I did. You know, it's really strange. It's a very creative thing. But somehow by doing it so many times, I kind of got the process down where it's pretty tight. If we didn't have something going in the first 20 minutes, it wasn't going to happen. And then the rest of it is polishing. But the idea, the kernel of the idea, just happens really fast. So that from that experience this last year, I think I did 30 or so of those. About one every 2 weeks, something like that.
Was this for yourself or for the business that you worked for?
This is for the business that I work for.
Cool.
The idea there was that that was what was kind of keeping me motivated because it was, you know, I was learning. And I, like I said, I did this for, I guess the last 3 years I've been doing that, doing about 30 or 40 of those. Yeah, I've been quite a few. But what that gave me was this confidence in myself that I know that I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I don't know what's going to happen, but I know that I can manage it. You're kind of managing chaos.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You're fishing and you trust you're going to catch something huge, you know, or catch something awesome or whatever. It's like it kind of gives you, after doing it so many times, there's a little bit of anxiety, but you end up kind of feeding off that anxiety. You know, the anxiety is kind of like, it's not stage fright. It's like energy that propels you to the stage. And so I got kind of used to that feeling of uncertainty. That's what this job afforded me, trusting in your skill set and trusting that you're going to be able to pull it together time and on budget. And so once I started feeling confident about that, I started thinking, man, why am I here? You know, if I can do this here, I can do this anywhere. And I just started, that's why I decided to kind of slowly make the transition. And I kind of started working in parallel, like I started my own company back in, I guess, 3 years ago now. And so I would take jobs on the side, do things here and there, do different competition things for different brands. Like I just got finished doing one for Kellogg. It wasn't necessarily for a particular cereal. Like it wasn't for Corn Flakes or Crispix or whatever, but they wanted the sense of breakfast. But they just wanted to make a song with breakfast sounds. So there's no real instruments. It's like crunching, spoons hitting bowls, refrigerator doors closing, you know, anything you use the kitchen as like your orchestra, so to speak.
Right.
That went off extremely well. But once again, you know, you get the brief and you're like, you know, if you're not a little bit crazy, you're just going to totally lose your mind thinking, how in the world am I going to do that? But start just thinking about it. And it's just like anything, you process any problem and you're like, okay, well, cool. All right. So, the refrigerator's the kick drum. Boom. Great. All right. Now, what's the snare drum? Oh, what about that? You know, there's like a cookie jar that can close. It sounds a little bit like a snare drum. So you just put it together slowly, piece at a time.
So when you're working at a business, though, all of the work and leads come in from that business. But when you have to move into your own, that's when you got to come up with that extra sauce, right? You got to bring the leads in. So how did you start getting your first clients on your own, aside from the business that you, the job that you had?
It's all cumulative. It's so strange. It's kind of like connecting the dots, you know. It's like, say, one way to think about it is when I was working for this company, okay, I kind of made it, had a touch point with this company, and a touch point with this company, a touch point with this one. Three separate things. But after a while, when I talk to them again and again, they start to realize that it's not the company I'm working for that they like. It's what I bring to the table is what they like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd say the most important thing is customer service. For me, if I was a plumber, I'd make sure that all the pipes were polished before I put them on. But I'm not. I'm a composer music guy. I really take pride in making sure that whomever I'm working with is not only likes what we're doing, but is absolutely, totally satisfied on every level. I just try to go above and beyond. I mean, I do look at it as a collaboration when it comes to the creative side. At least that's when it's the best. It's a collaboration. But at the end of the day, I'm there to make sure they like what I do. If they don't like what they do, I look at it as my fault. I'm going to change it. What do you want? Because at the end of the day, I want to make whatever product I make, I want to make it dead awesome. Or I don't really want to do it. To a certain degree, I'm kind of all in all the time when it comes to this kind of stuff. And I think the clients that work with me at that company, when I was there, they remember that and they literally come to me now for that kind of stuff. Another thing that I was able to do at the company was I do a lot of music for music libraries. This is just basically kind of like stock music tracks, which back in the day, kind of like a bad word or something. But these days, there's a lot of great stuff out there. But what I learned from doing this is I learned more to focus. And focusing is just super important. So one of the companies I work for is a company called Riptide Music. And their deal is that you have to create albums of music. You can't just create one song and throw it in there. You have to create a full album. So what that allowed me to do is to really put the blinders on and dig in one direction, in one different genre that I'm working on. It kind of, in a weird way, it kind of taught me how to sustain interest and a level of interest in a project. You know, because as an artist or someone, a creative person, you seem like, I'm just going to do this for a minute, throw it down, and move away. You know, and it's like you have this, there's a short fuse on a lot of things that you're doing. Instead of thinking of one, say, one breakdance song or one pop and lock song, it allowed me to think, no, I have to do 10. So I stay in that space longer. I can sit down and write a tune in a day, right, and I'll be done with it if I wanted to. But to do 10, it extends it to a few more weeks. So you're able to really dig in. I guess it's kind of the difference between reading a comic book, you know, like a regular comic book, or like reading a graphic novel that's like 10 volumes long. So same characters, same idea, same color style, you know, if you're thinking of an artwork, but it's a musical thing. I'm using the same tones, same textures, same drum machines, whatever. Learn that cycle where you create the first track and then the second, third, fourth, fifth, all the way through until you get to 10. And that just allowed me a degree of focus in music that I think people appreciate, because now if I'm doing one song that needs to be 30 seconds long, I have a very intense focus that I can turn on. I have the ability to really focus on something, really put the blinders on and just do what I need to do, because my timeline now is longer than I think some songwriters, you know, because I don't think of one song. Like I said, if I'm doing something, I do 10. So instead of making a song that might be 3 minutes out, I'm going to create at least 30 to 40 minutes of music in that direction, you know, in that genre. And that was something I was able to do on my own. I mean, that wasn't for the company, but the cool thing about working for that company was that if I'm not booked, I was sitting in a studio. So instead of watching YouTube all day or, you know, Hulu, whatever, I was sit there and go, okay, cool. I don't have a client until, 3 o'clock at 9 a.m. I'm going to write a song. I do that every day. I did that every day for like pretty much for the last 5 years. The first 2 years that didn't really count because I was kind of learning what I needed to do. But so after leaving that company, I mean, I have like 35 albums of material, that's out and being licensed now. So it created a whole nother stream of income for me. That's just mailbox money.
It's that passive income. The main takeaway I'm getting from this is how long it took. I see a lot of people getting into business and thinking it's going to take 3 to 6 months. You know, they go all over the place. It's the shiny object problem where, like you said,
right,
I'm going to write a different track every day. But completing that whole album, that whole project, that's really where a lot of people struggle. But you said it took you 5 years to really get to the point where you jumped ship. And that's a long time. I kind of want to put things in perspective, too. So someone doesn't think this is like, oh yeah, Ken just got this job, learned what he's got to do, and jumped out in 6 months. You know, it took a long time.
Is it the 10,000-hour rule or is it the 1,000-hour rule? I can't remember now.
It's 10,000.
Yeah, I'm probably like 11,000 hours in.
No, you're way more. 10,000 hours would be about 3 years. You're like 16,000 in.
Okay, well, I think that, extra 60% or whatever that I put in really gives me the confidence to walk into a place and say, hey, yeah, what do you need? What are you looking for? And really feel like I can meet them on that level of what they need by spending, like you say, 5 years. It was actually 7 years. The first couple of years were me just kind of literally, I don't even count those as anything. That was literally just kind of getting into the routine, dealing with clients, and it's not everybody sitting around smoking pot I'm dealing with ad agencies. I've got like, 10 people in my room listening to what I'm doing sometimes.
Right.
And then another conference call listening on the phone as listening to what we're doing. So it's a different vibe than you would think from the normal music. It's a little more corporate. But with that being said, that's also an awesome place to be, because you learn, you're around the creatives constantly. You hear them bickering about the script. You hear them bickering about, I learned so much, the whole process, and there was a lot to learn. And that's why I think it took really 7 years for me to really feel like I even had a shot to go out on my own and try it for myself.
At the end there, you kind of fell into a comfort zone at your job, because after doing something for 7 years, you can be on autopilot. What made you actually make that jump, right? Because it's really hard. It's kind of like crack when you get that paycheck every week. You're on autopilot, and then you feel like, oh, if I leave this, I'm on my own.
Yeah, without a doubt. Obviously, there's an anxiety there. But at the same time, I just feel because of track record working at the company and the relationships that I've made, just felt like it was the right time. And I don't know if that's going to be different for everyone. I don't necessarily recommend trying this for everyone. Maybe it's not for you. I mean, one thing that I know that I, from the very beginning, is, and you know this, Tom, is I like people. I talk to people. I'm not afraid to talk to people. Some people are more comfortable being in an office or working for someone else because they kind of give you your zone of this is what you're responsible for. You know your responsibilities and you don't have to step across the aisle or whatever. Well, I've always been a guy that hardly ever wants to stay in my cubicle. Even if I never worked in a cubicle, but if I would have, there's no way I would have stayed in my cubicle all day long. I would have walked the floor the whole time. That's just my personality. So I think personality has a lot to do with it. If you're like a quote unquote people person, then I think you have a better shot because without talking to people, I mean, people, I have this idea, this might be edited out later, but I have this idea that people in a room are kind of like free radicals. If you think of like a molecular situation where you've got you have a group of people, like a group of creatives or whoever, whatever industry you're in, you've got people looking to make a connection. And if you think about like people as like atoms and you think of products as like molecules, well, as they combine together, people combine together to make things. My music plus this person's video skill plus this script writer, we kind of come together for that moment and then we make this product, which happens in my business, happens to be an advertisement or it could be music for a film or whatever. But that music that we create together is really just a combination of our skill set. Some things might last longer than others, but a lot of my stuff is basically disposable. I'm going to meet these people, we're going to do a project, and we're going to break apart again. But when I see him again, it's easier for us to, we gravitate towards each other and we just lock in and we'll make something. I don't know if I was able to.
I actually like that. That's really good. That's really good. All right, Ken, thanks for coming on. And if people want to reach out to you or just find you, where could they do that?
My company is called Blue Green Submarine. So you can hit me up at www.bluegreensubmarine.com. And all the contact info is there. And especially if you're a musician or if you're a composer of any kind, I would love to talk to you just because I like to see what you're into. And at the same time, I love to do collaborations, and I love that. I love working with one other person or a group, or once again, it's like we're looking to make something cool, something interesting, and I think it's all in the collaborations. So, look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review on iTunes, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liefeld. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.